The aliens wasted no time and quickly placed him under a trance. After a few seconds he felt himself become detached from his body, and then it was as if someone lifted him out through the top of his head. It happened exactly like what he had read about in books describing out-of-body experiences. These people claimed to have had what was called a near-death experience. They are documented cases detailing events on how people who have died from an accident or illness, and then resuscitated back to life, or sent back by an omnipotent being due to some unfinished business they had on Earth. There were hundreds of these reports throughout the world. As with any phenomena, there are plenty of skeptics. Bill was one of the biggest skeptics. Like many, he believed that near-death experiences were pure nonsense, that the whole thing could be explained by the chemicals that are released naturally by a dying body. One of Bill's favorite stories, one that was popular in the 80s, was that when the body was going through the trauma called death, the person dying simply recalled the moving through the tunnel as the birth experience from the birth canal, mother's womb. According to the skeptics, the bright light of the delivery room is what the dying person sees as he desperately tries to keep from sliding into the dark abyss of death. The stories described how the person who died found himself floating to the top of the room and looking down at his own body. Sometimes they observed the doctors and nurses working frantically trying to revive them. Some of these people who died remained on this plane of existence for a period of time and then got sucked back into their bodies when the doctors succeeded at reviving them. Others reported that the moment they died they were sucked through what looked like a tunnel, and moved through the tunnel at a high rate of speed. At the end of that tunnel, loved ones, aunts, grandparents or friends that had passed away greeted them. The departed then visited with a being that radiated warm light and pure love for them. That being then revealed to them their entire life without judging them. Bill did not die and get whisked away, but he did experience the same curiosity of his own body as he hovered above it. He knew it was his body, but seeing himself from a new perspective was shocking. He looked different from what he had expected. What horrified him the most about the experience was the sensation of the other body sucking him into it. If it weren't for the alien sedative, his mind would not have been strong enough to survive that transformation. Once he was in the other body, it felt natural to him. He was aware that the body he entered did not need to eat or drink, and that the alien contraption inside of it sustained it. He could not feel the alien object that was inside the body and was only aware of it because he knew it was there from the X-ray they had taken of it back in the lab. The body radiated with vitality. He wasn't sure if it was because the body was that of a younger man or because it was energized by the alien battery pack. The body was fully clothed, so he didn't need to get dressed. He took his personal belonging, wallet and keys out of the pants of his dormant body, and he was ready to go. Before he could ask the aliens about the picture on his driver's license, they told him to look in his wallet. It was already taken care of. His identity fit his new persona. The aliens told him to have fun with his new self and to take a week to explore how the body felt. To get comfortable using the new body, he mingled with people who were strangers, like at the supermarket. He then set out and went to some of the favorite hangouts where his friends and colleagues might be. When he encountered someone he knew, he struck up a conversation with them. He was surprised that his colleagues from the committee who were familiar with the body he was in had no clue that they were talking to him or that the body that they worked around for months was now having a drink and a conversation with them. He tried to give himself away by using some of his own mannerisms. When that failed, he tried talking about some of the same likes and dislikes that their mutual friend Bill had. Nothing worked. His colleagues never suspected who he was. They merely assumed that they had encountered a talkative and friendly stranger. His wife and family did not miss him during that week. It was not uncommon for him to be away from home for days and weeks at the time. He wanted badly to disclose to some of his friends who he was, just to see the expressions on their faces. But after giving it some thought, he realized the insanity of the idea, and the repercussion it could have on them. Bill walked around the city looking a little closer at the people he passed on the street and wondered how many of them were counterfeits like him. There was no humanly way of knowing that answer. The aliens never gave him a clue to that question, but they did tell him he would know sometime in the future. He thought that if anyone could detect a spark of him, it would be his family, so he posed as an insurance salesman and went to his house. His wife refused his solicitations and did not let him inside the house. He was glad she refused him entry. It was a stupid idea, he reminded himself. If anyone made the connection, it could only prove harmful to their psyche. That was the lesson the aliens wanted him to learn. They sent him down to mingle with people, knowing that he would want to share his secrets with them. Secrets that he thought were too fantastic to keep locked up inside of him. At times he thought he would go mad. He felt a strong need to tell someone what he was capable of doing. After the week passed, Bill returned to the spot where he was to meet with the aliens. The encounter took place at a house that had a for sale sign on it and was vacant. He met with two aliens who were disguised as real estate agents. They looked and acted totally human, and perhaps they were. In the house he found his real body waiting for him. It had been kept alive with an external apparatus that covered its mouth and nose. Bill was still not comfortable seeing his body with that contraption covering his face. The aliens gave him a sedative and quickly returned him to his own body. They performed a different procedure than they did in the craft. This time they used a portable unit that fit into a briefcase. As he stood next to his body, they simply fitted a device over his head and siphoned him out of the temporary body and deposited him back into his old self. It was a totally different sensation from the first time. It was quicker and he hardly knew it happened. But after the transfer he did need to lay down for a few minutes to get used to his body again. Days later Bill returned to the office and convened a meeting with the committee. He told them what he had done and what the implications of that new information meant to them. For those who didn't believe him, he described the details of his encounter with them. Still skeptical, his colleagues replied that he could have gotten that information from the individual that he claimed to be. He told them exactly what they were thinking at the time he met with them. Finally, he told them that he would duplicate what had been done to him using one of the bodies that they had in storage. He asked for volunteers. During the time Bill occupied the other body, he was clairvoyant. He knew the thoughts of people simply by visualizing their faces or looking at them. He had a feeling that the phenomena was part of being detached from one's own body, and not necessarily because he was in a mutated human body. He was not sure if that was true. Four from the committee volunteered to go through the procedure. That surprised Bill. He didn't expect any one of them to try it. Bill had never done the procedure on another person. He assumed and hoped that the know-how would come to him as he needed it. He explained to those who volunteered that the results of what they were going to do were not absolute and he could run into unforeseen complications. After that revelation, three volunteers changed their minds and withdrew. Tim, the one who didn't, was eager to proceed with the experiment. Bill took no chances and decided to perform the transfer in the incubator room rather than use the portable system that seemed less complicated. He felt comfortable working in the craft, unlike the others who got the willies while working inside the spaceship. He sensed what the others didn't, that aliens were in the craft at all times, but the aliens remained invisible. Perhaps the others sensed the same thing, but since they hadn't been formally introduced to the aliens, they remained uneasy about working in the ship. The aliens left the portable system with Bill, and disposed of the body that he had used. They gave him no explanation about why they left the portable unit with him or why they disposed of the body rather than return it to the incubator room. The aliens uploaded complicated information directly into Bill's subconscious mind. The aliens did so because the amount and the type of information they needed him to know could never be learned by the human mind on its own. Tim, who had volunteered to go through the out-of-body process, was told by Bill to lie down on the surgical table next to the body that he picked from the four that were available. As the process to remove Tim's soul and place it into the other body started, Bill felt the sensation that time was slowing down. At first though he was having the biggest panic attack of his life and feared he was about to pass out. He had the sick feeling that one gets when subjecting a friend or family member to mortal danger and powerless to do anything about it. His crisis occurred when he came to the realization of what the heck he was about to do, removing the soul of a fellow human being and placing it into a brain-dead body. What if the soul slipped away? How would Bill catch it and put it back into Tim? The weight of that responsibility created anxiety in Bill. He was responsible for initiating something that only he out of the four men there supposedly knew how to perform, yet he had never done it before. In the blink of the eye and to Bill's relief, he saw the same two aliens that returned him to his body days earlier appeared in the room with them. The aliens quickly immobilized all of his colleagues and performed the procedure on Tim, removing his soul and placing it into Frankenstein number 3. Bill was allowed to watch the whole thing and in more detail. The aliens wanted him to learn how to do it. The event lasted 2 or 3 minutes, and the two aliens disappeared as quickly as they appeared. Bill found himself standing in the same spot he was before the aliens played interference for him. He was back to normal, composed, and no signs of the stress he had moments earlier. His colleagues were not aware of what happened, although they were astonished that the body swap was done so effortlessly and congratulated Bill on his astounding abilities. Tim was in his new body and jumping around the room with excitement. He could not believe that it actually happened. Tim went to his old body and marveled at it, yelling in disbelief as he looked at his old body and repeatedly yelled, "Is that what I look like?" His excitement overwhelmed him, and he passed out. No sooner than he was revived by his colleagues and he again worked himself up and fainted again. After the second time, they decided to let him come out of it on his own, which he did after a few minutes. During that time Bill asked the others in the room if they saw anything out of the ordinary. Did they feel anything while they huddled around Tim during the body exchange? They all responded with a negative. All three of them remembered watching Bill perform with the precision of a machine. They told him how they were amazed with the level of expertise he had achieved from working with the aliens. They expressed admiration for his know-how, but they also recognized that his abilities were gifts from the aliens and not his own. They had to be, they told him. They did not hide the fact that they, as well as others in the committee, were envious of his alien connection, and reiterated the fact that they didn't appreciate being excluded from direct contact with the aliens. Bill told them that he empathized with but that it wasn't his call or in his power to give them face-to-face access with the aliens. Then he revealed what really happened in that room during Tim's out-of-body experience. He, Bill, was not the one who performed like a machine, he told them. Whatever they had witnessed must have been a mass illusion created in their minds by the aliens. They argued with Bill and swore that they saw what they saw, and nothing could be any clearer, especially in the ship. It then occurred to them that nothing is ever clear in the ship. They told Bill what they saw. That he alone worked on Tim while alien gadgets buzzed around him like honeybees around a picnic table in June. Bill told them what actually happened. He was not even at the table when the body snatching took place. Neither were they. The aliens had paralyzed them and moved them out of the way as one moved chairs away from a table in order to sweep under it. As a matter of fact, all three of them were put into one corner of the room facing away from the surgical table altogether. The committee members looked like mannequins bunched up against a wall in that room, a frightful sight for Bill. Bill told them that he was allowed to watch and was not bunched up in the corner with the three of them, but the aliens did not communicate with him. The aliens did the job, then moved the three committee members back to the spot they occupied around the table, and disappeared. He figured that they let him watch so that he would know what really goes on when the going gets tough and complicated. Bill was a super nice guy, but his abilities combined with the privileges that were given to him by the aliens had made him a little arrogant, so he believed that the aliens brought him down a few notches. Tim told Bill and the others that he was able to read their minds. He knew what they were thinking while he was unconscious, but believed he was dreaming. The committee determined after some testing that extrasensory perception, ESP, was enhanced when the soul became detached from its body. Apparently, when in a host body, the soul never completely gets wired in, and remains detached enough so that the soul or the essence of what humans are is free to roam the psychic airwaves. The success Tim had and the knowledge that the aliens were keeping an eye on them to make sure things went right gave the other three members the courage to jump out of their skins and test the paranormal waters. After the other three converted, they discovered that they could all communicate without verbally talking to each other. It was as if they had two-way radios in their heads. On the downside, no way of turning them radios off. That was the drawback. Every thought they had was available to the other members. It took discipline and time before they were able to focus and limit their thoughts to constructive and meaningful dialogue. Distance was not a problem, neither were barriers like underground buildings, places they often frequented. They were also locked into communication round the clock and never got used to that invasion of privacy. Bill had an understanding of the aliens that his colleagues lacked. He didn't believe that the aliens were capable of doing harm to humans. Despite the fact that they claimed ownership of all human bodies on this planet, still, he wasn't sure exactly what they meant by ownership. Bill's colleagues were concerned about where and how the aliens acquired the bodies that they use when they mingle incognito amongst the human population. He told them that it was probable that they either grew the bodies in one of their ships or they did what the committee was doing and harvested humans from the endless reserve of people that are dying at any given time. With the equipment that the aliens possessed, they could keep humans from death. Why didn't they? Asked one committee member. Bill had no answer other than the obvious one: rapid overpopulation. The aliens told Bill that they do not interfere with the soul, but they had equipment that allowed them to remove the soul and place it into another body or containers on alien ships. For reasons they would not disclose to Bill. Bill had asked the aliens about the existence of God. And were the aliens God's little helpers? They didn't respond to either question. Bill received good vibes for the most part from the aliens he encountered, but there were some aliens that remained in the background and out of communication with him. He wasn't sure why, but he was thankful that they kept their distance. Bill felt shielded from the bad vibrations from that segment of extraterrestrials. Nevertheless, those ETs managed to get the little hairs on the back of his neck to stand up, and he prayed that he never had to meet them. The aliens never disclosed themselves as angels, nor did they mention that there were demons among them. That was a subject that remained unanswered for Bill. It was possible that they answered it when they revealed to him that their primary concerns for humans were the physical part of them. Their ability to move the soul in and out of the body was merely a necessary function of their work, similar to moving the furniture out of a room before cleaning the carpet. Bill was taken aboard the alien craft shortly after he and his colleagues experiment with the bodies. They let him dictate the contents of that meeting. His first question to the aliens was, why did they not help people who were dying in hospitals from sickness and accidents? Since the aliens had the capability to cure illness and repair all kinds of damage that did happen to humans. Their response was, we take orders from someone higher than ourselves, and just like humans manage to always find someone higher up the ladder to pass the buck, aliens too follow orders and are passing the buck. He asked them if aliens are both good and evil. They said, unlike humans, who make decisions based on what they perceive to be right and wrong, in the realm that the aliens occupy there is no confusion for them in that department. In other words, good and evil are illusions and exist for a purpose. On the ship, located in a separate level from where Bill was visiting with one of the aliens, there was a man that had been abducted earlier that day. Even before Bill had this visit with the alien knew exactly what was going to take place. He knew what Bill's questions were going to be before Bill had formed them in his mind. What then was the point of the session? Bill asked the alien. There was no point, the alien replied, or need for them to have a discussion with humans. The meeting was strictly for the benefit of Bill, to give him the opportunity of feeling comfortable working with them. They wanted to give him a sense that he could communicate with them face to face if he wished to do so, the way humans do. The discussion ended, and Bill followed the alien to the room where the other man was kept. The man was lying on the surgical table and was prepped for some kind of operation. This man was in his early 50s and in good health, but not for long. Bill knew what was taking place without anyone saying anything. He had watched and was allowed to take part in several similar procedures that were done in the past. Most of his internship involved the removal of tumors or fixing other ailments that plagued the bodies of those the ATs worked on. However, the surgical procedure that was taking place at this time seemed to see into the future of the man who was lying in front of him. He could see the man dying, his body racked with cancer. He could see the man's wife in tears when she learns of her husband's prognosis. He saw the man's three children, two daughters, one 16, the other 18, and a son who was 10. He witnessed the agony that the man and his wife would go through as they struggled with how to break the news to their children. He then saw the devastation on the faces of the children when they were told about their father's illness. Bill did not want to see any more. All he could think about was his own family and how they would be affected if that happened to him or one of them. Bill was angry. He shouted at the aliens, "How could they do an evil thing as this? Are they angels from hell?" The aliens reminded Bill that it was not their will to do anything bad or good. The ATs simply carried out orders from above. They were passing the buck. They could not elaborate more about the incident. They hinted that there was more at stake in that particular family than just the dying of man. Like many things that the aliens still had to reveal to Bill, he was not yet ready to understand the full implication of this one incident. Still, his biggest question was, why are they showing all this good and bad stuff to him? Was he expected to be a liaison between them and humans? How could he possibly fulfill such role now that he perceives what is being done to humans by extraterrestrials as pure madness? Until that episode, most of what was revealed to him was promising and good. Is there invisible requisition forms stamped on people's foreheads like a Takar assembly line to indicate what each human will have done to them in their lifetime? How do the aliens determine who gets a tumor or who has one removed? Do aliens create car accidents or any accident? Bill asked. Bill had not yet reached the level where he had that kind of knowledge. Each new step that the aliens took Bill through, they allowed him time to adjust. Some lessons required more time than others. The idea of taking a healthy human being and making him or her ill was the tougher lesson he had to endure. Next headline, the journey. Bill was told he would be going to another planet for 2 months and that he should make arrangements with his family and the committee. His wife was acclimated to the level of security he worked under and accepted his word that he could not disclose where he was going. But she was a bit perplexed that he would be unable to have communications with her and the children for that length of time. In the past, he always found ways to communicate with her. The committee members, who saw very little of Bill anyway, were indifferent about his sabbatical. His superiors were excited about his going and asked if the aliens would let him take a film camera with him. He told them that he didn't need to ask the aliens about that. He knew the answer. Bill did not need to physically be present with the aliens for them to give him answers or instructions. All he needed was to have a question on his mind. If it was pressing, he received the answer instantly. While Bill was away, the committee members that had made the leap into the strange world of body swapping decided they needed to make a few discoveries on their own, without Bill. In reality, the committee had few other choices. It was either that or disband the operation, since it was obvious to their superiors that they were adding little to the program compared to Bill's contributions. Tim alluded to the fact that perhaps they were ignored by the aliens because of their hesitation to embrace their freaky ATs. Many in the program lived in terror of the aliens and the ship with its thousands of paranormal alien devices. Their apprehensions interfered with their abilities to understand and make use of what the aliens put into their hands. Although Tim had the most respect for Bill, he still felt that Bill needed some competition from them. Why should they be Bill's lackeys? Tim asked his colleagues. Tim was certain the committee as a whole would make more progress if they were running on more than one cylinder. Bill was the only cylinder that was consistently firing concerning alien knowledge. The rest of the committee was along for the ride. They needed to fire up their own cylinder. Tim had an idea on how to do it. His plan was that the four of them that had crossed over the paranormal line by entering the bodies while in the incubator room needed to forge a little further into that mysterious rabbit hole. He suggested they make a bold move and go on a mission off the base while inhabiting the bodies. As expected, he found little enthusiasm among the other three men for that adventure. The rest of the committee thought it was risky to enter the bodies without the aid of Bill, and did not like the idea of taking the bodies far from the ship or off the base. Tim reminded his associates that they were stifled by fear. He was willing to take the risk and wanted to know who else was going to move ahead with him. The problem that Tim faced was that most in the committee had become completely dependent on Bill, even though they despised him. A few of the committee believed that the aliens were not the two. Monitor their activities when Bill was not around, which was a relief but also a concern. Tim disagreed. He had an indescribable feeling that the aliens were not only watching them during their experiments on and off the ship, but were present with them in the room during committee meetings, and that the ETs were silently placing ideas and strategy into the minds of the members. It was during one such meeting that Tim got a strong feeling that he would have an encounter with the aliens. Soon after, Tim found himself inside a spacecraft. The craft was nothing like Bill described it. In fact, it was so fantastic that he was convinced he would not be able to describe it correctly to the committee. The aliens told him that Bill never was on that particular craft, and that was partly why he could not describe it. The real reason that Bill nor Tim or any human cannot fully remember the inside of an alien craft is because some alien ships are in a constant state of flux. The changes were subtle and few humans ever noticed the transformations taking place in front of their eyes. The environment that Tim was in while in the ship altered continuously, yet he was oblivious to the changes. Tim was on the ship less than 1 hour, but for him that night was the longest in his life. The aliens revealed more to him on his first conscious abduction than they did to Bill. Tim had benefited from what Bill had already learned and was able to take in more information because of the mentoring from Bill. Tim did not see the exterior of the craft, but from what he observed of the interior, the ship was very large. It easily surpassed the size of 2 football fields on the level he was on, and there were many levels. Unlike some of the shows on television and the movies, he didn't see aliens scurrying about the ship, or lounging around in an interstellar tavern. Apparently these aliens remained in seclusion. Aliens didn't seem inclined towards coffee breaks and gossiping about co-workers or doing lunch. Alien lifestyle is light years different from how humans interact and carry on daily activities. The size of the craft indicated to Tim that there had to be hundreds of aliens on board the spaceship. He asked but didn't get a response for what purpose that ship served. It didn't appear that it was used for ferrying humans around because he had not seen any humans. It was possible that just as he was unaware of the changing features of the craft, that he was also unaware of all the aliens and humans on the spaceship. During his exploration of the ship, he saw on several occasions aliens in the distance, but once he arrived at the place where he thought he saw them like a mirage, there was nothing there. He remembered that the craft had a huge inner court with a large atrium that was about 11 stories high. At the top was a clear bubble dome that was like a window to the universe. The glass dome appeared to magnify the size and brilliance of the stars and galaxies. The ship was not in motion, or at least Tim didn't think it was. If it was, Tim felt no sensation of movement. Looking out through the top of the massive structure, the view of Earth with its single moon was exquisitely spectacular. The only other time Tim felt nearer to heaven was while vacationing in Europe and visiting some of the massive Gothic churches. The ship he was in reminded him of those magnificent buildings with their dazzling profusion of arches and columns. The only thing missing was the motifs and paintings from the Renaissance masters. Many of the designs in the spaceship were unfamiliar to him, yet very impressive. Judging from the decor, the aliens definitely had a deep appreciation of beauty. The atrium glass made it appear that the stars and the planets drifted inside of the ship, or perhaps they were holographic images, he was unable to distinguish.